I'm more than what you made of me. Follow the voice that you gave to me. And now I gotta find my own. My own. My own.
My own.
We'll be right back. Holy God. Welcome to episode 10 of Diva Discourse. Today, we will be discussing Listen. Okay, guys, this is going to be our gayest episode. I don't think there's any way around it. It's Beyoncé's gayest song in the drag queen musical theater geeky kind of way.
Absolutely.
It's her gayest movie. Mm-hmm. This song is just, it's bejeweled in crystals and feathers and headbands and fights over champagne dinners. And so I apologize in advance, but gay.
Okay, now please stand for the Philippine national anthem.
Listen to the song here in my heart. A melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find release. Oh, the time has come for my dreams to be heard. They will not be pushed aside and turned into your own, all 'cause you won't listen.
Listen was released in 2006 as part of the soundtrack for the film adaptation of Dreamgirls. And it was released again in 2007 as part of Beyoncé's second solo album, B-Day. So that said, this is an unusual episode because it's not a straightforward Beyoncé song. It's the first to originally have come from an album that wasn't one of her own. And this is the first song we're doing that is from a movie starring Beyoncé. Listen was written by Beyoncé alongside Henry Krieger, who wrote the music for the original Broadway show Dreamgirls. The writers also include members of the rock band Edna Swap, Scott Cutler, and Anne Previn, who are most famous for the song Torn, which became a global phenomenon when it was covered by Natalie Imbruglia in 1997. I'm in love with both versions. The original is a gym headbanger, whereas Imbruglia's is one of the most sublime soundtracks of childhood nostalgia I can recall.
It's also really important to remember that the song Listen doesn't exist in the original Broadway production of Dreamgirls. It was written specifically for Beyoncé for the movie adaptation and adds so much to the plot of Dreamgirls, adds so much to the role of Dina. And I've been thinking, researching this episode, what makes a power ballad? How do they serve us? Why are the primary vessels for these songs women? And I feel like Dreamgirls gives us a perfect answer to all of those questions. We know that the power ballad is like a moment of extreme disclosure. The singer is always making some kind of grand confession. And we always find this flooring. A power ballad is usually premised on a previous moment of weakness or silence. And the plot of Dreamgirls really follows that trajectory to a T. And the lyrics of Listen make that a literal conceit of the song. Like, listen to me, I'm using my voice for the first time.
The musical Dreamgirls opened on Broadway in the 1980s. This film was released in 2006, and there were four new songs added to the film. The original songs are, I think, some, there are three in particular that are fantastic. Some are a little bit hokey and kind of play the role of just turning dialogue into music in kind of like a middling fashion. But of the four songs added for the film, three are actually incredible. There's Love You I Do, which is a masterpiece unto itself. There's Patience, a beautiful song sung by Eddie Murphy. Perfect World, which is fine. and then Listen, which is a masterpiece, and a masterpiece of 21st century musical composition.
Right, yeah. So Cheryl Lee Ralph, who originated the role of Dina on Broadway, never sings Listen. Might I add that Cheryl Lee Ralph is one of the most charismatic women in show business. Most young people today would probably recognize her from the show Abbott Elementary, and she's been winning a lot of critical acclaim for that as of late. She also has a very powerful voice that she had to tamp down for the role of Dina, much like Beyoncé herself. But what's really interesting is that after the movie Dreamgirls, when the play Dreamgirls was revived on Broadway, they actually added the song Listen into the play and like rewrote it so that it was a duet between Dina and Effie.
And interestingly, that duet was foreshadowed by the duet that Beyoncé and Jennifer Hudson sang at the Oscars, where they actually did do a duet to Listen. Yeah. Well, we are going to be talking a lot about Jennifer Hudson and, of course, about Dreamgirls in this episode. The interesting thing about the way that Listen came about is that the producers found the song And I Am Telling You I'm Not Going, which, of course, was made famous by Jennifer Holliday, who sang it on Broadway. They felt that that song provided such a crescendo, such a climax, that there needed to be something in the second half of the movie that mirrored that level of energy. So Beyoncé told MTV that Bill Condon, who directed Dreamgirls,
and also Chicago, let's not forget.
Exactly. He suggested that the second half needed another song, and she said, "It was exciting for me. It was important for Dina's character because she was so controlled throughout the whole movie, so manipulated. And finally, when she stands up for herself, it's so effective. I love the record." The New York Times reported the year that Dreamgirls was released that Jennifer Hudson's scene was such a showstopper that arriving halfway through the movie produced a problem for the second half. Bill Condon actually said that he felt the Broadway show seemed almost over at intermission, and so he asked his team to create a new, equally moving song for the second act. And the answer, of course, was realized with Listen.
Totally. And to add to that, I just want to say it makes total sense that Listen was written just for the film because it kind of sounds quite different from the rest of the music. Not that it makes the rest of the musical incohesive, it doesn't at all, but it has more of a Hollywood mass media flavor than the rest of them. It was like quite obviously written as well post Celine Dion.
Oscar-winning original songs tend to actually be very formulaic, very boring, almost famously soporific. And I think Listen really transcends those categories. It might have been written to wow critics, but I think this is one of the few original songs written for a movie that's lasted as almost our equivalent of one of the Disney masterpieces from the 60s through the 90s.
Absolutely. It's kind of the same rank as like Part of Your World or Reflection from Mulan.
Absolutely. And before we talk more about the musicality, let's just frame Listen briefly in contrast to what precedes it through Jennifer Hudson, because I feel like if we don't talk about Jennifer in a kind of like intentional chapter of this podcast, she's just going to take over the episode. Jennifer Hudson is basically the same age as Beyoncé. She's just 8 days younger than her. She was 24, turning 25 during this whole saga. But unlike
Two Virgos.
And yet unlike Beyoncé, this is a completely different rags to riches story. Well, very famously, she auditioned for American Idol.
Jennifer Hudson from Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
Says that you just finished work on a Disney cruise ship.
Yes. Yes.
We're going to expect something better than a cruise ship performance, right? Mm-hmm. Today?
Yeah, definitely that.
You're here because you think you're the next American Idol.
Yes, I do.
She was recognized as having the most powerful voice that season. And yet, though she made it to the final round, she was the seventh to be eliminated. And it was quite a shock at the time. Now, Fantasia won that season. And it's ironic because both of them ended up auditioning
for the role of Effie. Yeah.
And there were over 700 women competing for this role. And obviously, they all were aware this is going to be a life-changing role. Mm-hmm. You're being cast opposite Beyoncé, Jamie Foxx, Eddie Murphy.
in what is secretly the lead role of the whole movie. So Fantasia and Jennifer Hudson were competing for the same role of Effie, and it was a very close contest. It was only after several auditions that Bill Condon was convinced that Jennifer was the right choice, and even at the start of filming, he wasn't quite sure. Something in his gut just told him she was the right one. But yeah, it was crazy that she wasn't even the winner of her season, yet like was catapulted into one of the biggest movies of that decade.
And became a household name.
Totally. And as we'll talk about later, won an Oscar.
Won an Oscar.
Still the only American Idol contestant to win an Oscar.
And as we were saying, Effie is considered, if not the lead role, then certainly the most moving, the emotional center of the movie, and has almost as much screen time as Dina. I mean, I think they're probably equal, if not more, you know.
I think Effie might have more. And you definitely, if anything else, remember her more than Dina.
Absolutely. The role is written to be remembered. Yeah. And Jennifer Holliday won the Tony as a lead actress for the musical. Beyonce was very... It was controversial that the producers decided to nominate Beyonce as lead actress and relegate Jennifer to all the supporting categories. It was obviously done with image in mind, Beyonce's fame in mind, but it also continued this strange subcurrent of life echoing the tension in Dreamgirls.
It was so fascinating.
Now, obviously, I Am Telling You is delivered by Hudson in a manner that I think not only rivals Holiday's version, but supersedes it. Jennifer Holiday's version is incredible, but you know, she has a distinct voice. It's different from Jennifer Hudson's. Holiday's voice is scratchier. You hear almost a Janis Joplin-esque rock falsetto.
Yeah.
Hudson's is so powerful. When she says, "Stay, stay and hold me," 2 minutes in,
it sounds like he's trembling.
And it's gut-wrenching. I mean, when she says to Jamie Foxx's character, "You're gonna love me," and tears start falling as hers do. But her Oscar was really sealed 4 minutes into the song. The last few lines she sings, especially the last love, absolutely insane.
So
what she
much
does.
Pathos. And the way the camera just drinks her in, first from behind and then from the front, with just one spotlight on her in like this great glittering suit.
The Broadway version scene was filmed in a dressing room, and the director decided to move Jennifer Hudson's film version of this to the stage to add drama. Really great choice. But for me, the last love, what Jennifer Hudson does is actually very much imitating what Jennifer Holliday does, which is to add a almost triple melisma to the word love in this crazy way. But I think she does it better. It's absolutely insane. I mean, you have to hear this.
So, so good.
Okay, so Listen starts with a simple piano. There's gentle rolls of the cymbal. All ingredients, Enzo, as you were saying, for a award season song. Beyonce's voice starts slowly, but it's still powerful. This is a song where she finds her voice. And it's really with the first chorus, an octave jump, that you hear her voice in all of its power.
Into your own, all 'cause you won't listen.
And this is a song that gains momentum as it continues. By the second chorus, "And I tried and tried to say what's on my mind," the power of her O's.
I am alone at a crossroads. I'm not at home in my own home. And I'm trying to try.
And then comes a real breakdown. "I don't know where I belong."
I don't know where I belong, but I'll be
these lines begin to hit the sorts of notes that make both Beyoncé and more complex Motown so delightfully distinct. Their songs are pop music and chart toppers, but they also riff on the sorts of intricate scales that gesture towards their jazz forebears. And I really feel like you hear that ancestry in Listen.
I think another major influence on this song that didn't exist when the Broadway production of Dreamgirls was staged is Celine Dion.
Mm.
Like, I think My Heart Will Go On, it's all coming back to me now. I think songs like that are written all over Listen. Another influence, I think, is Whitney Houston's I Have Nothing. Another very climactic ballad. So initially, people tried to adapt Dreamgirls for the big screen in the 80s, and Whitney Houston was supposed to be cast as Dina, but the production fell apart when she insisted that she sing "I'm Telling You I'm Not Going," which is so funny.
It's so funny. Well, and in the 90s, Lauryn Hill was considered for the role.
Yeah, right. But it's just so funny. It's like, I want to sing all the parts.
I mean, true diva, yeah. Right? But it's really the melody that makes this song so excellent. And I said this on Emma Baker's podcast, Stargirl.
Love you, Emma.
This song is crack for gay men. It's stirring and a ballad. It's still somehow a banger. I feel like it was written for drag queens. And I've seen drag queens perform this song. They do it so well. I mean, Bangkok is my go-to for this.
Yeah.
But it is one of those songs where they don't dare actually sing it. They have to lip sync it. And it works so well.
Right. Well, you know who dares actually sing it? Filipinos.
I imagine so.
So Listen is one of the most popular karaoke songs in my country. It is so massively popular that some people don't even know it's by Beyoncé.
Oh, wow.
Or that it's from Dreamgirls. It's like a folk song at this point. It has no author.
But this is what I mean about this song being our version of a Disney staple. It's assumed a life of its own. I think it's one of the most underrated original songs written for a 21st century film, which is why it is absolutely scandalous that it lost to I Need to Wake Up from Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. Go listen to that song.
Yeah, have you heard it? No, you haven't.
Well, it's a fucking joke. It's a bigger scandal than Frank Ocean losing Album of the Year, I think.
I need to move.
That said, Eddie Murphy losing to Alan Arkin was also a scandal.
Major injustice. You know, I was rewatching this movie, you know, as you were, and Eddie Murphy just gives a performance of a lifetime. Like, he plays like this kind of James Brown type. Sometimes he dips into Barry White territory. During Patience, he becomes Marvin Gaye.
Absolutely.
Like, he is incredible, and I don't know why we don't talk about this performance more often.
Totally.
He gave his all.
I mean, the part is this amalgamation of all the Motown greats. You see a bit of Otis Redding, you see a bit of Curtis Mayfield, but it's really, he captures the tragedy of that sort of role where, you know, one genre is burning out, another is ascending. They're consumed by a scramble to the top, by drugs. He performs it brilliantly.
Oh, God, Jimmy just breaks my heart. He brings so much sorrow to the role, and I feel like Dreamgirls is, among many things, a variation on one of Hollywood's favorite tales, A Star is Born, where we see an old star kind of receding to be supplanted by a new one, and the old one kind of being thrust aside and forgotten. And Eddie Murphy is that old star in this iteration.
Absolutely. And for a little bit of context, it's worth noting that this musical is loosely based on the life of Diana Ross ascending to the cultural fore as the lead singer of the Supremes, but also the only named singer of the Supremes. It also draws a parallel between Florence Ballard, who was a member of the Supremes, who left, who was forced out also over alleged concerns of her weight. But Dreamgirls draws a parallel between Florence Ballard and Effie White. And Beyoncé herself says that she pored over tapes of Diana Ross to prepare for the role. She said to the New York Times, because this was an era where she was freely giving interviews, quote, "It was really strange how sometimes I felt I was channeling Diana Ross." But she also wanted audiences not to conflate Diana's story with her own, and she didn't want people to think that this was the story of Destiny's Child. Ironically, though, in many ways, Beyoncé is an amalgamation of so many of these characters, not just in outshining counterparts, not just in internal feuds and competitions, but in also conquering the most competitive musical and cultural industrial complex in the history of mankind.
You really hear the influence of Diana on Beyoncé's vocals for this movie, especially in the title song, Dreamgirls. You don't get as much of her raspiness, you don't get many growls until Listen, of course, but she has a very like soft, light, sweet tone, like a bird.
And Beyoncé described how difficult it was to keep her natural power kind of restrained throughout the role. We are dream girls, boys, we'll make it happy, yeah.
The writer Michael Eric Dyson gave an interview on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert where he said that Diana Ross was an artist who was, quote, "claiming the sweet nubile tendencies of black femininity and articulating them in a postmodern space where urban conditions were driving down black existence." This is funny because it was actually during a whole segment where he was championing Beyoncé as the greatest performer of all time and comparing her against all these other great names. You know, Diana Ross's light, sweet voice was, many music historians and critics say, was a big reason of why the Supremes were such a successful crossover phenomenon. A lot of white audiences liked that they didn't growl or scat or improvise too much. They were quite mellow. Baby, baby. And I think the movie Dreamgirls is very cognizant of how race and the performance of race factored into the success of the Dreams / the Supremes. There's a scene where the Dreams are singing backup for Jimmy, and they're singing it at a white club. Jimmy kind of goes crazy at one point and starts scatting and makes a patron uncomfortable. He has to leave. But Jimmy Foxx's character, Curtis, notices that all the white men in the club are looking at Dina, Beyoncé. And in the very next scene, it's when he decides to make her the front woman of the group because he understands that Dina is his key to crossover success. And actually, in an interview, Bill Condon was talking about Beyoncé's audition tape for Dina. And Bill said,
"It was obvious before we turned the camera on. It was just clear that she was able to become something very different. I thought she was clever, too, because the obvious thing would be to try to channel Diana Ross. And certainly there were elements of Diana Ross in what she did. But she also added this dollop of Marilyn Monroe, which I thought was so great, because that kind of idea of the dominant kind of white sexual figure, that Dina is trying to become that, too, as she presents herself in Dreamgirls to a broader audience, was just a very smart thing to do."
Okay, let's talk about the music video of Listen. So there's more than one version. The main version is the one that was released as an amalgam of both original footage and movie footage. And it was funny in the way that all music videos that sample scenes from movies are funny. They're never as good as the original scene, and they often just end up being like a weird clash of tones and times. In this case, it's basically just Beyoncé singing in front of an alternatingly white or black screen, interspersed with scenes from Dreamgirls. And I think the only notable thing about this very banal setup is that it's basically an advertisement for the perfect set of human teeth and the perfect specimen of human hair.
Yeah, her hair does look so good. But the lighting is terrible.
Lighting's terrible. It's so hokey. Beyoncé's wearing an outfit that wrenches me back to high school because it's exactly how popular girls would dress in 2007.
It's like a tank top.
Like a beautiful but simple tank top with jeans.
Yeah.
She tears up as she's singing, but in a way that makes me think that Matthew Knowles was like, B, let's try it with some tears. But there's really no point watching this video because A, the whole original scene in Dreamgirls is much better. And B, there are so many good live recordings that there's really just no point spending any time on this one. So the film version is so much better because it is preceded by Curtis, who's played by Jamie Foxx, telling Dina that her voice has no personality. And then we cut to Dina in the recording studio.
And it's just her in a recording booth. And I think that's a very conscious decision on Condon's part because it really contrasts with Dina's stage debut when she sings the title song, Dreamgirls, and she's fully made up in a glamorous dress with great hair, and the stage is kind of lit up with like a galaxy of lights. Here, she is completely alone. She is not so done up. She isn't being presented as a star, but it is the moment that her star is truly born.
Hmm.
You know, the band in the movie, they're called the Dreams. They're initially called the Dreamettes. Eventually, they drop the diminutive et. But really, this graduation into womanhood is purely nominal for Dina because she stays a girl until the very last act of the film. She is the last of the dreams to grow up, the last to wake up.
Mm.
And Listen is such a tectonic moment for her because after her entire life of being treated as a product by Curtis, she finally makes the choice to create her own dream.
And I think it's a foreshadowing of Beyoncé just 5 years later leaving her father as a manager who she felt was forcing her into his vision of a pop star. Her outfit's also so much better. She has an orange top with a headband, which is so much more fitting for the song. Also, dark-haired Beyoncé. We're obsessed with dark-haired Beyoncé.
I love dark-haired Beyoncé. And like every single look of hers in this film is gold.
Totally gold. And in the movie, there's a scene that cuts to Dina at a press conference for a movie she was forced to make but didn't want to make called Cleopatra.
Which parallels the real-life film Mahogany that Diana Ross also starred in that, you know, Berry Gordy, who was her lover at the time, made her star in.
And Beyoncé looks very sad during this press conference, but what really struck me was that I noticed it was the same face she made post Met Gala elevator incident. Like, Beyoncé has this kind of like face that is not ever super sad, but it's just kind of downcast eyes and like a slight, slight frown.
That's so good. Well, it's also a really effective scene because it's not choreographed at all. And prior to this moment, we only see Dina giving highly choreographed performances, like her One Night Only performance, where she's kind of in a gay club.
Oh my God, well, the 70s was just a gay era.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but there's like shirtless men behind her, and like I think there was a drag queen in the crowd.
The bartender shirtless.
Yeah, yeah.
There's poles everywhere.
Right.
Well, what I love during One Night Only too is that like the gays just pop out from the back.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It doesn't make logistical sense.
Not at all. But in the soundtrack's recording, you actually hear the fire go.
Yeah, yeah, right. But yeah, so Dina is not doing any choreography at all. It's just a close-up shot of Beyoncé's face and just her giving a performance.
And when it's over, Jamie Foxx gets up and leaves. Okay, so this is where things are going to get gay, but we are now going to talk about live performances.
They've been so straight up to this point.
Exactly, and we've been like pretty masked, I think. So what's notable about the live performances of the song, and we're going to take you through all of them, is that Beyoncé, when she performs Listen Live, sheds Dina and assumes the mantle of Beyoncé. She sings the song as Beyoncé, not some forcibly subdued pop puppet. And she therefore brings a great deal of not just energy to the song, but musicality to what's already a vocally intricate song. And I think a primary example of this is that she varies in how she chooses to end the song. She complicates the ending, she tries out different endings, and she really sends the song off with this electrically, but kind of like idiosyncratically operatic gusto. It's idiosyncratic because she plays with scales here. She shows just how deft of a musician she is. Okay, so understandably, there are a lot of live performances of the song. So we're going to skip the Beyoncé Experience World Tour. We're going to skip the I Am World Tour. And we're going to go straight to one-off televised performances she gave of this song. And we'll start with the Grammys. So at the 2007 Grammys, where, by the way, Listen was not nominated, Love You I Do was, Beyoncé starts the song a cappella. And she's slowly revealed by a spotlight, which to me recalled Whitney Houston's performance of I Will Always Love You in Bodyguard, which is another kind of loose parallel. She has a flower in her hair, a gorgeous half-translucent dress. And her performance and style, to me, felt like an upgraded version of her Dangerously in Love performance at the Grammys 4 years prior. There was kind of a similar look, right?
Yeah.
Similar vocal performance.
With like the mermaid hair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think here she ends the song, and remember, all of her endings are a little bit different when she performs this live, but at the Grammys, she ends a song that I think really befits the ceremony because she leaned into the musical and technical complexity that she's capable of. She repeated a More Than What twice, and she did two different versions of it before performing these intricate runs during My Own and twiddling her fingers. The Oscars were different.
Yeah, well, so the Oscars was a whole medley. Jennifer Hudson started off, and midway through her performance of Love You, I Do, Beyoncé rises from beneath the stage and joins her. After that, Beyoncé starts Listen, and Jennifer joins her for a duet. It's lovely.
Absolutely. I think what was interesting about this performance is it also revealed a little bit about the dynamics of the group live. I think it's their highest profile live performance. And you can hear that Jennifer Hudson's voice is astounding, but it's not yet seasoned. She doesn't modulate or moderate. It's all about power. And as a result, Beyoncé, who's one of the most practiced showwomen on earth, actually, I think, triumphs. When you hear her sing Listen with Hudson, she sounds better than her. They will not be pushed aside or turned into your own, all 'cause you won't listen. In fact, I think B was so good during this performance that she was asked to come back 2 years later for a veritably chaotic medley of musical songs with Hugh Jackman. Absolutely insane. Beyoncé was great. I think what's bizarre is that she shared this not only with Hugh Jackman, but with Amanda Seyfried and Zac Efron.
Yeah, that was a crazy ceremony.
Okay, now this is going to be really hard to talk about without us laughing the whole time. But there was also a performance at X Factor. Oh, God help us.
Keep in mind, this is a few years after Dreamgirls was filmed. And so Beyoncé has already performed this song to death. She knows it in and out. She's a master at it already. And so it's like a walk in the park for her.
Totally. And just a little bit of background at the time, X Factor was everything in the culture. At this moment, American Idol was huge, but X Factor, which was the British and European equivalent, was where all the uncut drama took place in like true Brit style, you know, mm-hmm. not a foreskin metaphor mm-hmm. intended.
I love that we're going from American Idol to X Factor. It really speaks to the moment that this all took place in.
Absolutely. And okay, so this performance is hilarious. You guys have to watch it because it's really this amazing, globally aired spectacle of a goddess walking among whimpering mortals. So Alexandra Burke was a finalist on this season of The X Factor. She sings Listen. She starts it. She's beautiful. She can sing, but not with particular charisma. She doesn't really have star power. So she starts singing Listen. And you can even hear when she sings it, she can't even really nail like You Should Have Known, you know? It's like really good karaoke. And then halfway through the song, Beyoncé walks out. She's so poised and calm that she barely moves her face while blowing Alexandra off the face of the earth.
It's so funny how casually she does it. She's almost expressionless the way she sings it. There's no strain. She doesn't bother to telegraph emotion. She just like sings it like she's singing a nursery rhyme.
You see her mouth open and you kind of see her tongue vibrating, yeah. but that's about it. And yeah. as Beyonce is like letting out the notes, Alex next to her is mouthing, "My God," and "Wow." But it's when B does her solo, "Listen," she brings the house down. Alexandra wins, but the funniest thing is that after the song ends, Alexandra breaks down sobbing so hard that her face is just mascara and tears. Like, you can't get through this video. It's very difficult, right? It's so bad. And when they ask Beyonce, "What do you think of Alexandra?" She says, "Such a beautiful voice and such a beautiful young lady," and then it cuts her. She's like... Okay, before we finish with our cymbal crash, let's just say that there's also a great little performance of Beyonce practicing Listen in her car where there's no mic, no reverb, no backups, no effects. I think Tina's filming her. They're in a Range Rover. And Beyonce is just practicing alongside her laptop. And I just think it's a notable version because you hear just how good of a singer she is. But you also glimpse her finicky perfectionist side where she's like, finishes and is just like, "Okay, I got it." And shuts her laptop.
Right.
Okay, Enzo, you start talking about this because I might get emotional. But we're now going to talk about not just the best performance of Listen Live, but one of the best performances Beyonce has ever delivered live.
And this was Listen on Oprah.
I have to say that my mom would watch Oprah every week or even every day in Dubai, where I grew up. And I happened to be walking by the television set when Beyonce started singing this, and I froze and watched it over her shoulder, and it really changed my relationship to Beyonce.
Really? Wow. Well, at that point, were you already a fan?
I was a Destiny's Child fan. I liked Beyonce, but this is the moment that I went from, yes, I fantasize about boys in my class, to I must now masturbate daily to them. So the song starts with Beyonce in a skyscraper bun. And this time she doesn't start a cappella the way she did at the Grammys, but with piano. Her band is surrounding her. And you can tell she performs this not for the Grammys or for the Oscars or for X Factor. This is for Oprah girls.
Yes, and for Beyonce herself.
Absolutely. She does not hold back. She nails every note.
Well, so Beyonce gets a standing ovation, obviously. And Oprah simply looks to the camera kind of stunned and it's like, "We'll be back after the break."
And then she turns to Jamie Foxx and is like, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
Okay, So just to hit some concluding notes, this song has been covered widely on the likes of Glee and X Factor and all the American Idols. And it's because Listen is one of our 21st century musical masterpieces. It's got Disney, Broadway, Motown, but it also tests the lungs and it tests your range like few dramatic compositions do written in the past few years. All right. Okay, I had a number of contenders for our client at the hair salon. I thought of Disney princesses such as The Little Mermaid. I thought of a number of pop stars, but I realized that it had to actually be one of Max Martin's creations. And the creation in particular, I realized this song was absolutely written for, was Britney Spears. Max Martin, in an interview years ago, actually echoed Jamie Foxx's comment about Dina's voice having no personality except for what he put into it, when he famously said that Britney at age 16 was perfect to write for because she had no opinions, she could be whatever he wanted. And if you listen to Listen, there are hints that this was written for Britney. When Beyoncé sings, "Listen, I'm alone at a crossroads," she's referring to her 2002 film, Crossroads. When she says, "I'm not at home in my own home," she actually foreshadows what Britney Spears said during her court testimony, which was,
"Making anyone work against their will, taking all their possessions away, credit card, cash, phone, passport, card, and placing them in a home where they work with the people who live with them. They all lived in the house with me, the nurses, the 24/7 security. There was one chef that came there and cooked for me daily during the weekdays. They watched me changed every day naked, morning, noon, and night. My body, I had no privacy door for my room. I gave 8 gallons of blood a week. If I didn't do any of my meetings and work from 8 to 6 at night, which is 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off."
And when Beyoncé sings, "And I tried and tried to say what's on my mind, you should have known." Think about Britney's Instagram videos. She gave us hints the whole time.
She did.
I really think that Beyoncé listened to Kara Cunningham's Leave Britney Alone YouTube video and based the song off of it.
So my guest is very near and dear to me because it is none other than the Filipino singer Jake Zyrus, who famously covered Listen multiple times when he was then named Charisse Pimpenko. This was before his transition. And he shot the fame really young. When he was just 16, he was invited to the Oprah show. He had been singing in a bunch of singing competitions in the Philippines prior to that, and just had an incredible, powerful voice at such a young age. After his appearance on Oprah, Oprah actually contacted the producer David Foster on his behalf, who also famously worked with Celine Dion. And Jake went on to duet with Celine. He went on to make a guest appearance on a TV show, Glee, where he actually sang the song Listen. And then in 2017, Jake came out as a trans man. And this was an incredibly controversial story at the time in the Philippines. I remember my parents, who had once cheered him on, totally turning against him and like disowning him as a Filipino that we were supposed to be proud of. But I listened to Listen and I remember Jake's incredible rendition of it. And I'm just so happy that he has found his own voice, that he has learned to speak for himself, that he is finally the person he was born to be. And I think that is just truly spiritually the essence of Listen. Oh,
and with that, I'll say thank you all for listening to this episode. And we're going to leave you with a bit of Beyoncé's live rendition of Listen from I Am.
Now it's time to fight.